Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with wonderful rural journalist Peter Burke. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Catherine. How are you?
Look, I'm much better than you because you've walked in here with a lovely pair of shorts on, but I suspect because it's to keep a bandage very clean, you've got a great big cut in your leg. You've got stitches and everything.
I wouldn't mind if I'd been sort of, you know, pecked to death by a rooster or run over by a ram, but I actually ran into a drawer in my room and split my leg open. So 23 stitches is not a bad go.
Yeah, see, this surprised me. When you said that you were going to come in and you had a bit of an accident, I've just assumed farming accident. I assumed you're out on a tractor or you're off-seeing one of the farms and you've caught yourself on a barbed wire fence or something like that, but no, just at home.
Yeah, just you know, in the most unusual place to have an accident, I suppose, is the best way of describing it. But that piece of furniture no longer exists in the bedroom.
Oh, dear.
So it's got goodbye on it.
It's got goodbye. It's not gone onto the fire.
It's too good to burn, but it'll be given to someone who probably wants it.
Right.
More than I do.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to see that you've hurt yourself, but it's nice to see you here in the studio. Now, this will be our last chat for the year, actually, because it's the end of the year. So what are we going to talk about this time around?
Well, I'm going to go back and talk about Nauru Farm again today because I thought it's one that I've been to and I know well, and it's a really fantastic example. The farm is called the Wipiri Trust. It's called the Wipiri Trust. Now, Wipiri is an interesting character. He was a person who was a great sort of rangatira of Māoridom. He was a Māori politician. He became the Eastern Māori seat MP in the late 19th century, and then went on to form this Wipiri Trust. He was also responsible for getting the act together so these trusts could actually take place. Although he died in 1915, he was very much praised for what he'd done. So he's a very, very influential person in terms of not only the trust that he set up, but in the whole of the Māori trust set up in New Zealand. He was an influential Māori. He's like Te Aparana Ngāti. He's remembered in Pomāori and others who were very, very well remembered for what they did. So the interesting thing for Wipiri to me is that when we talk about the Ahu Whenua Trophy, it's contested every year, and there's trophies for horticulture, sheep and beef and dairy. Interestingly enough, Wipiri won it in 2022 for sheep and beef, and then won it again this year, 2023, for horticulture. And that's unusual. Actually, they're the first trust to have won it for sheep and beef and horticulture, because horticulture only came into the system 2 years ago, so they took it out. So I'm going to talk a little bit first about the sheep and beef operation, which is, I remember going around the farm touring it. They put us on four-wheel drive trucks, you know, utes, whatever you like. And it was just, the roads were just like better than some of the roads around here, actually, in Kapiti. But I won't say, I won't be rude to the council because I have a reason to, but I won't be rude about them.
Okay.
But it was beautiful. And we saw the extent of the farm. It's massive. Just to give you some idea of numbers, I thought they were interesting. They've got, it's nearly a 7,000 hectare property, so that's quite big.
Gee.
5,000 effective. That means there's the rest is there's bush and some of it's
bit of native land,
all that sort of thing. They have on it something like 48,000 stock units. Now, stock units is effectively a sheep, if you like. Mm-hmm. So that's split between sheep and cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just the quality of those, their lambing percentage is very high, and it's a sort of medium hill country. 175%, that's pretty good for that sort of country.
Yeah.
In beautiful condition. I know going around it was just every corner you went around this road, you suddenly came across something amazing.
Really?
And I guess that's one of the things that saddens me a little bit today, that a lot of people, and I've talked even in my own areas, say, come out and see a field. Go and see some of these places. Don't just sit in your office in Johnsonville and look out the window and see the gardens of wherever, whatever. Come out and see the real world.
Actually, where is it?
It's just north of Gisborne. It's a place called Te Karaka. And it's not far out of Gisborne. It's up in the sort of western side of the road. The east is sort of out towards the Pacific. Upper Valley Road. And it's just, It is just absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a lovely country. I have a great love of the hill country of New Zealand. I mean, I suppose if I go north, I don't take State Highway 1. Generally, I'll try to go the back road, go up through Kimbolton, Mangaweka, have a look at that country. It's lovely in there. And,
yeah.
And this is another example of going in an area and then going on a farm, which is like just driving through a normal road. It's just, I just couldn't believe the quality of the road. So, that's, so they won it. And I think the key to that really is a whole lot of things. One is, Wepiri himself was a very innovative, visionary individual. And over the years, the trust has always has been innovative and visionary. They've got some great people on there in their governance area. A couple of them is a guy called Alan Hauranga, King Smile, a very, very smart Māori leader in the agribusiness area. And the one of the women, Trudy Mira, that is absolutely brilliant. Again, you know, a great affinity with the land, and they've got a great manager. So everything I looked at that farm was great. So that's the sheep and beef side. Then you think, okay, can they do better? Well, of course, blow me down, Charlie, they did. And this year they entered into the horticultural section of our whenua. And that was very hard because in the middle of all of this, Cyclone Gabrielle struck.
Yeah.
The 14th of February, Valentine's Day, call it the Valentine's Day cyclone, whatever you like. But that took its toll on that area, and it took a toll on a lot of other farms. Many other entrants had to pull out because they simply could not get on their properties.
Wow.
Wepiri went ahead with it. And just to give an example of what they've got, so we're talking of, on one hand, we've got 48,000 stock units, mixture. Here you've got 10,000 hectares of gold, or 10 hectares of gold, 5 of new gold, another 11 of organic gold. Then you've got rocket apples. So the small little apples.
Oh, these are apples you're talking about, not kiwi fruit,
The gold is kiwi fruit.
The gold is kiwi fruit, okay.
Gold, organic, and then they've got persimmons. They've got persimmons, they've got oranges. Citrus is very big up in that, in that area, as you know. It's like, then they've got these rocket apples. Have you seen rocket apples? They're little ones. They're tiny little things about...
Oh, gorgeous.
And they were created by... a guy up in Hawke's Bay and the plant and food people, it was using almost like it's a recessive gene, but they managed to create this little apple, which now is sold in cylinder-type containers, and they're exported. Rocket apples are becoming massively popular.
Are they the little sweet ones?
Yeah, they are, little tiny ones.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. They're great for kids and a great little snack.
They are. They're sort of a snack food, and they've also, that's the purpose of them, that you can put them in a kid's lunch. They're not a big apple that they have to leave half it or whatever, but they can eat it easily. And I know for me, that size apple is just lovely. It's a taste you want, and it's a reasonable size, and they're exported. So they've got rocket apples as well. They, again, got hit by Gabrielle, and again that destroyed a lot of their crop, but they still went ahead with it, and in the end they came out the winner. And I think it's a tribute to them that they and the other entrants too, to be fair. I mean, the others were very good too. There's Ngāi Tukarangi, which has got a big orchard, kiwifruit orchard down in Hawke's Bay, and they had terrible damage. You know, the flood just went right through it. They lost a massive amount of their crop. So,
that's terrible.
It is, but Wepiri came through again. So, you know, I think that's quite amazing. And what they do, we're talking about just we've talked here up till now about the product, if you like. But the Māori Trust, the great thing about them, to my mind, is that they don't just focus on that. They focus on their tikanga. They focus on giving their grants to the young people, to their kaumātua, and all the other bits and pieces. So there's a whole lot of around the Māori side of it, which is part of the judging process in Ahu Whenua. It's not just how profitable you are. That's important, sure. But it's what else are you doing?
Okay.
And I think that's the great thing. And it's interesting to see that Wepiri came through for the second year in a row. And that's unusual, as I say. It's a credit to them. It's also a credit to the others that came through as well. I'm not trying to decry for them because they're very good operations. I've been to many of them. But, Wepiri, again, so that's a name to remember. You know, it just Gisborne is a great place. I love it because it's got all sorts of – there's a great firm there called Leader Brand. They do, leafy greens. They supply those all around the country. They've got operate – their headquarters is there, but they've also got bases in Matamata and in Pukekohe and down south now. And you're seeing this. There's a lot of diversification because, you know – and the other thing about that is, particularly, I guess you've got to look at Gisborne and say, well, Te Rāwhiti, they suffered massively by the infrastructure damage up there. You know, you just they were locked down for, well, Wairoa was blocked out for 3 months, for heaven's sake.
It's unbelievable to think about that. That's your business and it's destroyed and they're still coming through it.
It is, and this week we've seen, you know, the fact that Leaderbrand can't get through to Hawke's Bay with their product. They've got to go all around the road. And I find, to be critical of politicians, they've been too busy building flipping cycleways and not enough building roads.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. I just can't. I get sick of cycleways.
You've got to get your priorities right.
The cycleways don't earn us an export dollar. They just earn a few well-to-do people who ride e-bikes a chance to ride around gracefully in Wellington, and I don't like it at all.
Look, I don't blame you saying that as well. It's our food.
It is.
And it's people's livelihoods.
And in the case of Gisborne and Te Awhiti, there's only one way out south. It's that road, which has always been difficult. I mean, you know, in its better days, it's been bad.
Right.
It's terrible now, and I've been through it. And, you know, again, what used to take me just over an hour and a bit to get through to Wairoa is now an hour and a half to 2 hours to get through.
Right.
It's double the time.
Right.
So I'm going to be going up there in the new year to look at how Te Awhiti and Hawke's Bay have recovered from the Valentine's or Cyclone Gabriel's, and I'll be back with it in the new year for you to talk a bit about that too.
Well, that would be good because you know you're an expert on that area. You've seen the land, you visit it often, and you can tell us firsthand without worrying about any other reporters or politicians telling us what it's like. You can actually tell us from the ground what you can actually see.
And I don't think I can adequately describe it, even if I've got photographs of it, and I don't think even they tell the story.
No.
You can't, when you go to the Esk Valley, you think, even my photographs are inadequate. They don't describe the devastation that's there. Someone once said to me about poverty, you don't know poverty until you can smell it.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch it on television, you can do all that sort of stuff. And I think the same with that, some of that area, you can't understand it until you see it for yourself and walk the talk.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I'm an expert, but just saying that's the comment about it.
Well, that will be a very interesting conversation that we have when you come back from that visit. Can I just ask then, going back to Waipiri, that they won those two awards, is it unusual for, it's certainly obviously unusual to win the awards, but is it unusual for this size of farm to have both of those practices happening at the same time? I think you did mention a little bit about it before. Are there many others that are set up like that?
I think what you are seeing is a lot more diversification. I mean, I think the previous, one of the previous winners who won it twice, they had both a dairy and a sheep and beef farm. So Māori, people forget their scale. You know, 100,000 stock units is not uncommon.
Right.
And I don't think that's something that you see, dare I say, slightly north of Johnstonville, or to be crude about Johnstonville, which I don't know why quite a rubbish
that. You are picking on Johnstonville.
I know, because I lived there.
Okay.
I was born there, sort of. I was baptised there, actually. So I can pick on it a bit. I've got skin in the game. But you do see that in some of these areas where we do see scale.
Mm.
Also, I do think there was a move around, I've sent on dairy farms up in the Eastern Bay of Plenty where they're now, if they can put in, they'll put in maybe 5 hectares of kiwi fruit as well. So they've got something there in reserve. If the dairy goes down, there's kiwi there. If kiwi goes down, there's dairy there. There's a bit more balance. And I think, to be fair, a lot of Māori trusts have substantial interest in forestry as well. Some of them have interest in commercial buildings. They're very diverse. They're not just one-trick ponies. They're big operations with multi assets, you know, different assets.
Yeah.
But Waipiri, to me, would be a multi-million-dollar business.
Well, okay, great.
That's not unusual.
Yeah, and not being bought out by anybody else.
No, it won't be ever sold. It's never going to be sold. It can't be sold to some rich someone from somewhere in the world that wants to buy up a farm and put a house on there and, you know, drink wine on the grand and the veranda and, you know.
Yeah, or keep farming and taking the money out of the country.
Yeah, and we'll grow pine trees on it. But anyway.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good news.
All right, okay.
That's good news. Okay, actually, we're getting a little bit political, so let's just dive in. Well, we're not going to get political per se, or we might, I don't know, but what are the issues that are
I think the big issue at the moment is, I think there's a, just talking to one of my contacts yesterday, actually, about this, well, I was talking about dairy farms in particular, and there was this sort of, I guess, waiting to see what the new government will do.
Mm.
We've had, during the election campaign, besides watching Hipkins and Luxon pour gelates or gelatos or whatever you like to call them, there was actually some serious stuff behind it, which the lamestream media, of course, didn't want to cover. That was serious. You want to cover the trivia if you're in the lamestream media. Anyway, but there was some...
Crazy.
I know. But the promises were made around getting rid of regulations. And one of the big phrases that were used by all the new coalition was, let's get rid of the regulation. Farmers, I think the mood is, that is good news, but mm-hmm. let's see what you can deliver.
Right.
And I think it will be, now let's translate the words into action. Now, there are some very big issues around at the moment, and talking to Todd McClay the other week, he raised it, and another person has raised it too, is around these things called freshwater farm plans. And with great respect to organisations I worked for once, regional councils, these are being rolled out by the councils in response to the government, the previous government's laws. However, I venture to suggest that some of these, the settings or some of the rules that have been put in place are quite impractical. They're quite nonsensical. I'd go as far as to say they're bloody stupid, because they are, and farmers think so too. Mm. And the time to do that is unreasonable. And there's a lot of concern around those at the moment, and some arguably are saying that they're driven by staff, not by the councillors.
Right.
Because, and that was a comment made to me quite recently. That is a big worry for the primary sector at the moment as to what will happen. The government have said we'll step in and put a pause on this. It doesn't mean to say that the direction of travel in terms of the environment will change. It just means the pace of it will be a bit more, will be slower, and there'll be a bit of a more rational, practical approach to some of these regulations, which frankly are, to me, they're probably about a D in a university essay on the environment. You know, they're that bad. There was one case in Northland where if the council's proposal had gone through, 25% of the farms would be taken out of operation. Now, that's just, I mean, whoever wrote that, it needs to change their drugs, quite frankly. Sorry, but, you know, that's about it. They're on the wrong drugs. They need to go and see a doctor if they can get in.
If they can find one.
Sorry. That's a big issue. And if you look at that, that we're going to see, I think, the abolition of the Labor government's built environment legislation, which has in fact replaced the RMA. We're going to get a new RMA of some sort. That will take time. I don't think that's going to happen overnight. There will be cheers and champagne corks pop because the Labor legislation is going to be dumped, but don't expect the new stuff to suddenly take effect quickly. And I think that, you know, when the talk was that when the Labor government stuff was put in, it was going to take 10 years for that to come through. This is, anyway, someone once said the bureaucracy is the opposition in residence, but that's not, anyway, we won't go down that track. So you've got that side. So I think there's still a lot of hope out there. If that's, the question is, will that be realised? Can they deliver? And I don't know. I'm not going to get political and say, can they can't. What we've got differently this time in the coalition is we've got a Minister of Agriculture and Trade, but we've got a lot of little, I won't say this, little centres, little workers coming alongside to help him out. So you've got Nicola Gregg, who's going to be responsible, among other things, for horticulture. You've got Andrew Hoggard, former president of Federated Farmers, now, of course, an ACT. He'll have biosecurity, food safety, and animal welfare and skills, which I think has got something to do with training farmers. And Mark Patterson from New Zealand First, who is a farmer from down south, will have responsibility for rural community. So once upon a day, Damien O'Connor did all those things. I think there was one other associate there, but basically McClay has got trade, which is a big focus of his, and then there's the other bits and pieces around it, which is, I think, just giving, I hate to say, crumbs to the birds of the election, but that's what it comes down to.
Right.
That's what it will be. So we're going to see a different operation, I think, in the next 3 years, and depending how it goes, I just don't know. I would... You know, the pessimist in me says it'll be a disaster. The optimist says, let's hope it works, because if it doesn't, it's going to be a challenge. And I think the farming community will be the judges of that. They want certainty. They want things that are practical. They don't want university essays turned into legislation, because they might get an A for a university essay, but they get a D minus for practicality on the farm.
Yeah.
And that's, but again, I would emphasise on this, everything I'm hearing from all of these people is, don't expect all regulations to go. They won't. We've got commitments to the Paris Accord. We've got other things we've got to deal with. We can't just deregulate and say, go farm as you might have done 100 years ago. That's not going to happen. It's a matter of how it's done and when it's done. And we just can't, if we're going to sell our exports, we have to do that. So that to me is going to be the issue. And I think we'll be, over the holidays, while we're reading, I don't know, whatever we read, they'll be reading what they call BIMs, which is briefings to incoming ministers, which means they're going to be listening, reading what their departments have given them to read about their new areas and learning a bit about it. And I guess then trying to see how that fits in with their own philosophies, because there's got to be a match around there somehow. The department is doing X. Does that fit in with our new philosophy? And I guess that's what will transpire in the coming months, as into the new year.
So who else then is involved in the ag sector?
Well, there's a lot of them, really. I mean, if you look at it, the Immigration Minister, Erica Stanford's a big person, because one of the big complaints that's come through in both horticulture and in the meat industry has been the Immigration Department has been pretty useless, quite frankly. And I think they've done a lot of hard work to prove that conclusively, because if you can't get in overseas people at the right time for as long as they're needed, then we're hearing horror stories of 3 months to waiting to get a visa approved, which is crazy. I mean, we've got the situation in the health sector now. Don't wind me up on that one. But, you know, that's immigration has a lot to answer for the problems we've got. You've got the Minister for the Environment, outside of Cabinet, interestingly enough. You've got climate change. You've got infrastructure. Infrastructure is going to be very big. We've talked about Te Rāwhiti and how do you get those roads back to a point where they're not just having to be, we have to just clear the slips away every time there's a couple of 100 mils of rain. Mm. There's got to be some certainty around that.
Yeah.
Because we're not just talking about a road for people. I mean, it's important. There's people in Wairoa have to go to Napier for hospital.
Mm.
It's their base. They've got to go south to get those things. People in Gisborne have got to send their produce to market down that road to get on the ships to go out and to get into the lower North Island markets. The roading is very, very important, and that's something that I think that people tend to forget a little bit. And then I guess, you know, you've got the idea of you've got local government, which is, I think, is an issue which will probably be looked at, I hope, in time by the government. I'm not convinced. I was involved in the first regional councils when they came out in the late 80s. Great idea. Heaven forbid what they've done now. I won't use the phrase, but they're a bit of a muddle, in my view. Not very successful. And then you've got health. And I think we're going to see, with all this uncertainty around, I think we're all getting a bit scratchy. Those people up in Te Rāwhiti, when you think about what they're going through, some of them haven't got enough paddocks to put their stock into. It's just a mess.
It's terrible.
And I think we're going to have a mental health issue.
Right.
Big time.
Well, I mean, you can have issues on farms with mental health anyway.
Yes, you do.
Regardless of all these problems.
It's a hard gig. And also, if you look at, say, the dairy, the prices, for example, at the moment, and lamb prices are low. The dairy prices are moving up slightly. There's been a little bit of a pause in that. And the good news is we saw this week the ANZ Bank uprated its projected farm milk price to, I think, $7.75, which was almost to the point, or $7.70, almost to the high point of Fonterra's range. Fonterra has a range, I think, of $6.50 to $8 per kilogram of milk solids. That's interesting to see ANZ come up higher, or very high, and that's a good sign. If they're thinking that way, they're saying that things in China will improve slowly, not be back to what they were, but they will improve. And that the global dairy market will gradually stabilise a bit, and that may result in slightly better prices for dairy farmers. That's good, but then you've still got higher interest rates, you've got higher farm costs like fuel, all those things are factors. And so there's a lot of all this sort of, it's a cauldron of uncertainty, if you like.
Mm. Okay, so what other trade priorities are there?
Well, I think for Todd McClay has made it very clear India is the big one.
Right.
That is not an easy nut to crack, and I think there's a lot of, it's easy to say India, but I think New Zealand's let its relationship with India slip quite badly. We had a very good relationship back in the days of David Longley when Sir Edmund Hillary was the High Commissioner to India, and there was a lot of synergy there. I mean, Hillary was a figure loved. Interesting enough, I was talking to one of my friends this morning, and she's lived in India for quite a while. She said, Indians know New Zealand very well. They know it because of cricket, actually. She said... one of them asked her where she lived. She said, oh, I live in Napier. And the first reaction was, oh, that's McLean Park, isn't it? So, I mean, that says something.
That's extraordinary.
So that was extraordinary. But she said the average Indian doesn't know about New Zealand. And there's a lot of immigration, of course.
Mm.
The question really is, with India and a free trade agreement, is dairy. Because India is the biggest producer of dairy in the world, but it's small. You know, herds of 7 or 8 cows. And New Zealand, to crack that nut, is pretty hard. Because politically, they can't afford to, as they haven't in Europe. We've seen that same problem occur in Europe where, again, we didn't do well on dairy because the dairy farms are small. They represent votes, the dairy farmers. The politicians are independent on those people. And I don't think they're not going to do anything to upset them. So therefore, we may have to take that, accept that maybe dairy may not be something that we're going to do as part of an FTA. Or if we do it, it will have to be a very minor part of it. And I think the Indian relationship is very important, as is places like Indonesia, the whole of Southeast Asia, because as we, you know, we've traditionally, I guess, exported to Europe, which is lovely, UK, but now Asia is really our focus, and we're seeing even product like in the apples and in the kiwi fruit, like ruby red kiwi fruit, being pretty much designed for the Asian market.
Yeah,
it's red. It's loved by red's loved. It's,
yeah,
so we are seeing.
That's clever, actually.
It's very clever. So you've and red's beautiful as a kiwi fruit. So what we are seeing is a movement in product terms to those nearer markets, which of course means less cost, more reliable shipping, easy to get to those parts of the world, as opposed to taking the long way through to Europe.
RMA, let's talk about that very briefly, just to wind us up.
Yeah, okay, and that will wind a lot of people up, actually, the RMA. It's a good wind-up one. Most people think the RMA is the worst thing that ever came into, but it wasn't only the RMA, that was bad, but then the new one that Labor introduced, it's called the Built Environment or something like that, I can't remember the title, but that was seen as even worse. And I think the RMA, as introduced originally by Geoffrey Palmer, so Geoffrey, I think he is, of course, was actually not too bad, but of course it got, you know, altered, it got tinkered with. It's a bit like a house that's got bits added on here and there, and it became a bit unwieldy and not so good. There will be time to get that together, and there's got to be, I think what National are saying, or what Todd McLay has told me, is that they will be working with farmers and the primary sector to make sure that yes, the direction of travel is there, or all those involved in it, but we want to hear what you think is what. We want something workable. We don't want something that is just regulatory for regulatory sake. And one of the things we're seeing, and I go back to the example of Ireland here, which I know a little bit about, their attitude towards dealing with farmers is much more a working relationship as opposed to a straight, this is what it is, you do it or else you get fined.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be, hopefully there'll be a lot more of that approach, which is a much more successful one, because once you tell people, I think we've got a problem, then we want to solve it, as opposed to you've got a problem, I want you to solve it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. I mean, put a regulation, we all know that. I mean, give me a no and I'll find a yes. You know, if you put up a block in my way, I'll find a way around the blockage.
Yeah, it's kind of human, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. I mean, it defies human nature to say, you will do this.
You must do this,
must, because most people are smart enough to find a way around that.
Yeah.
And mess the whole thing up and make it more unworkable.
Yeah.
And then you start to plug the bucket, and suddenly it's a bucket full of leaks. Anyway.
All right. Well, finally, what will our ministers be doing between now and?
Well, traditionally, Muldoon
January, February.
Traditionally, Muldoon used to go to Hadfield's Beach and deliver a piece of his message to the nation at Hadfield's Beach Lions Club,
okay,
or Rotary. I forget which it was now. I don't think they'll be doing that.
Right.
But they should. I'm sure they'll want a bit of a break. They had a pretty difficult campaign. Some will be perhaps licking their wounds a bit because they didn't get in.
Mm.
There'll be those that are coming back in who were high profile in government are now going to be low profile in opposition, and how are they going to manage that? Mm. I feel for them. That's, you know, it's a big step down to be than being a minister to be not being a minister. It's not only money, it's more it's hard work.
Yeah.
I don't doubt they work very hard. I know one of them particularly well, and he works very, very hard.
Mm.
The others, I think, will be reading up to make sure they can see what are their departments doing, what are the areas of, what are they going to be their spokesperson roles in both sides, and how are they going to deal with what's going to be ahead of them. So there'll be a lot of SWAT. It'll be a period of, you know, the exam results will be published sometime in February when Parliament sits, I guess. We'll know how good they've been reading. Have they read the thing? Was the real piece of information hidden on the last page of the last piece of paper that was put in there, the thing that sent to them? And did they really read that?
Did they spill too many drinks over what they
exactly
were
I mean
reading?
We've all done that.
Yeah.
But that's just Prime Minister's great trick. You know, if you've got something, if you want something that you want hidden, you just put in the last bucket and whatever it is, and the minister never gets around to reading, he just looks it through, signs the thing and goes up, and then sort of realizes he or she has signed something off that they wish they had read. Anyway.
Well, thank you very much for, well, this is, you know, this is only episode, I think, 4 or 5 of Farming Aotearoa. It's been delightful. And we look forward to you coming back in next year and having more chats with us.
I'm looking forward to it too, and I really enjoy it. And by the way, compliments of the season to you and to all the listeners. And, you know, if you know me, if you don't know me, you're probably lucky. If you do know me, hard luck. You probably know the truth. But anyway, have a great Christmas. Do some things that you shouldn't do and come back refreshed, like I hope to do too.
Marvellous. Thanks so much, Peter. Season's greetings to you too. Look after that leg.
I will.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air, for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.